Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. It's a bright and sunny morning in July, and it's a great day. I'm so excited to present my podcast guest to you this week. Her name is Susan Kahn, and she is the promoter and owner of Sue's Strategies. And before I tell you about her, I just have a couple of things I want to fill you in on. I have taken a little bit of a pivot with some of the things that I've been working on, and it's really exciting, but also giving me some butterflies a little bit. So over the past 10 years, I've been following this passion of mine to take the things that I've been doing in the disability community and just continue to push out everything that I've learned and everything that I have pulled together and present them in a way that people can, you know, use as tools in their own lives. So back when I was raising my kids, don't really want to tell you how long ago, but it was more than two decades, as you all know, almost three decades ago. I like to say that when Elizabeth was born, an advocate was born right along with her. As a young mom, I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know, you know, what to do. I didn't know how to get started. I didn't know what I needed, but I knew I needed help. I knew I needed something. I had my family, I had my husband, but I needed so much support. My daughter needed so much support. And then my next daughter came along and our family just needed so much help. And the systems are so fractured. There's just not enough money. There's not enough people. There's not enough time to do all of the things that you need to do to raise this little person and to bring them into the world and to give them everything they need to get launched. So even though Elizabeth died and she didn't get to live to be a full adult and to live in this disability community that we all live and support and work and play and enjoy, you know, it's still my passion. It's still who I am. It's still, you know, my community. So it started me on this path of why? Why isn't it comprehensive? Why isn't it one place that we can go to learn and to pull everything that we need? So bopping around, trying to figure it out, I went to law school. I thought, well, I'm smart. I can figure this out. And it just took a long time to pull all the pieces together, kind of like, you know, pulling apart this horrible knot. And then once you have all the strings, you're like, well, how does it go back together again so that it's not a knot? So eventually, you know, after Elizabeth passed and I, you know, had some time to kind of be numb and grieve and then think about where did I want to carry on this mission? What did I want to do with all of this passion that I have? It started to come together for me. You know, first there was the law group, special needs law group, and that is definitely meeting a need, but not everybody needs a lawyer. Not everything is a legal matter, and not everybody can afford me, and not everybody is in Massachusetts. So after that, I started trying to think about, okay, well, what's the next thing? You know, how do I bring in that next level of support? Because a lot of what I was doing was beyond legal services. It was about education. It was a lot of social workery stuff. So then in comes the advocacy. And so I started, and I had been doing this all along, you know, going out and doing the free presentations. And I really was running myself ragged joining every group and every committee. And I was the gal who never said no. And I was out there, you know, 2-3 nights a week and on the weekends, and I had my kids with me. You know, there was a lot of times when I would be at an event and I had little Caroline and I had Elizabeth in her wheelchair and we were just doing stuff together. You know, but that started getting old. Like, I love my community, but you can only give so much and you're still not reaching enough people, right? So respectfully to the people out there who have, you know, trolled me and yelled at me and told me that I should be giving everything I know away for free, put a pin in that. But moving on from the free webinars and the free, you know, speaking engagements, there's only so much of that you can do and you're still not reaching everybody, right? So there's more, there's got to be more, I'm saying, and trying to figure that out. And then I started the fiduciary company, Special Needs Family Services. So that's meeting another need, which is, you know, that team to carry forward, which is supporting family members and friends of the family and, you know, stepping in roles that people can't do or need help doing, whether it's trustee, primarily trustee for a special needs or a disability trust, or you know, other things, all things financial, supporting that case manager role as well. So that's great. Those companies are going well, and family services can meet a need outside of Massachusetts too. It's not just Massachusetts. Wonderful. Okay, but that's still not enough because it's still missing that advocacy piece, that information piece, that community. This is where I'm starting to get to this. I have been trying to think about community for so long. It's all about community. And, you know, we really want to engage, educate, empower community. And when we are community, we are strong. And we all know this. So coming together as community. So then I started working on these courses. So I want to empower, I want to bring that knowledge forward because I can reach more people if I can, instead of meeting people one at a time, which I'm still doing and I'm willing to and happy to do that, I'm going to create these courses, which are on demand or in groups, so I can meet more people. And that's going well too, but it's not, it's kind of just moving along slowly. So how do I bring this element of community? Well, I think I've got it. You know, I started my Circle of Care in Facebook, and that's great. It's got like almost 1,000 people in it. But only people who are on Facebook can get there. And people are not as engaged. So I need to bring it off Facebook because Facebook owns those names. And I just want to have something that is ours, where it's our community. It's not Facebook's community. So I'm bringing my stuff to Mighty Networks, and I've created our Circle of Care on Mighty Networks. And we're going to launch at the beginning of the school year in September. And just stay tuned, because in about 6 or 8 weeks, as soon as we are ready, we're going to launch our Circle of Care on Mighty Networks, and it is going to be awesome. And that's where our community is going to be. And all of our webinars are going to be there. All of our guests are going to be there. We're going to have live talks. We're going to have Q&As. We're going to have all of our articles and our blogs and our group coaching and our individual coaching, and our courses are going to be there, and all of our conversations are going to be there. And I think this is it. I think we finally got it. I think we have finally figured it out. I'm so excited. This is the wave of the future, and the future is now. It's here. So yay for us. Yay, Annette Hines. Yay, special needs companies. We have finally figured it out. Yes, we still have the law firm, and the law firm is here to serve you. And I couldn't be prouder of the folks that work in the law firm. And yes, we still have special needs family services, and please come. We have the best trustee services on the planet and the best care management services on the planet. And we will take great care of you and your family members. But now we have our community too. So excited. Stay tuned for more. Now, I'm really excited to introduce you to this week's guest. And Sue Khan of Sue Strategies is a prolific writer. She is so passionate about reading and learning to read and changing reading instruction in America. She has been such an activist in Massachusetts and really around the planet. She has been promoting two bills in the legislature here, an act to promote high quality, comprehensive literacy instruction in all Massachusetts schools. Love talking with her. She, like so many of us, got involved because her son had challenges and he needed to learn to read. And she, the smart cookie that she is, figured it out. She picked it up. She learned how to instruct him. And she's just one of my favorite people. So I'm excited to present this podcast interview to you. And I hope that you will check out so much of her free material. She's got over 750 free blogs on Facebook. She's on Twitter. She's on Reddit. She has so many animated videos on YouTube. She is just out there. You know, she's got 18 books that she's written, and they're all available on Amazon. So check her out. It's Sue's Strategies, and we will have all of her contact information in the show notes. And here we go. Today, I'm hosting Susan Khan. So happy to have her here. It's really good to see you, Susan. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very happy to join you.
So Susan and I have had a couple of conversations now, and I'm really, really glad that we finally got this interview up and running, because I've had to cancel on her a couple of times and she has been so gracious. So thank you so much, Susan, for being so wonderful about this crazy life that we have sometimes, as you know, only too well. So thank you so much. So Susan is a reading specialist/expert and has done some amazing things that she's gonna tell us all about. She is really on a journey to change how we teach reading in school, and she's doing it. But she has been an advocate for reading studies. Oh my gosh, I'm not going to say this properly, so I'm going to let her jump in and help me here. But she has been promoting different bills in the legislature here in Massachusetts, and has been doing some great advocacy work. And in addition to helping individual students, has been working on a broader stage to make a bigger impact and a splash. And so, Susan, as we talked about before I hit that record button, I really wanted you to kind of start by telling us what started you on this journey. Where did you get the inspiration to start on this journey to become this reading expert?
Well, it's interesting. I had three sons, and the third son was born with learning disabilities and attention deficit. He was clearly very bright. He had a wonderful personality, but he had trouble speaking, and of course, he had trouble reading. At school, no one seemed to know what to do with my son. And I had kind of figured that there might be problems. So I had taken my first course, Introduction to Learning Disabilities, when Douglas was 3 years old. And in those days, they knew about only 15 learning challenges, and my little boy had 13 of them.
Wow.
So I started looking then for how I might learn to improve his speech, how I might learn to improve, you know, his language skills so that he could read. And someone said, go to Mass General Hospital. So I brought Douglas to Mass General Hospital for speech therapy, and I became a language therapist there, which was a wonderful program on Orton-Gillingham.
Right.
Techniques for teaching multisensory reading skills. And so even though Douglas finished first grade unable to read, I had just graduated from MGH. So I said, don't worry, honey, mommy will teach you. And I taught him to read in 4 months. I used all the decodable books. There weren't very many at the time. Mm-hmm. And I did pay my son 5 cents a day to read with me because he wasn't keen on it. But we were very successful. And the phonics that I taught him improved the clarity of his speech. So it was a win-win all around. By the time I graduated from Mass General, though, I had accumulated 33 additional graduate credits over my master's degree in reading from Boston University. Mm. So at that point, I decided to return to the teaching profession. I had taught briefly before I became a parent, but this time I would become a special education teacher. Mm-hmm. So that kind of began my journey. Now, of course, I was trained in phonics at a time when hardly anyone else was. So children came to me 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 years below grade level, and I was teaching at the middle school. And I said, clearly, no one at the elementary level has been to Mass General Hospital. They don't know what to do. And I knew that no one at the high school was trained as I was. So I said, I have 2 years in which to make a difference in these children's lives. I'm going to design a program whereby these children will enter high school reading at high school level. It took me a while, but I did succeed. Uh-huh. And so by trial and error, I found out that the children understood everything, they just couldn't remember it. So then I researched, how can I help the children remember the phonetic facts they need to read?
Susan, how did you know that? How you said by trial and error, you figured it out that they couldn't, they could figure it out, but they couldn't remember it.
In my class, they understood what I was saying. They completed their worksheets. They talked intelligently with me, but they would go to 5 other classes in the day. And when they came back to me the next morning, they would look at me like, did we ever talk about this before?
Okay.
And also people with dyslexia who made up most of the students whom I taught, they all tend to be average to above average in intelligence. So there really wasn't a problem with learning. It was a problem in remembering long enough to implement what they had learned.
I see. Okay.
Well, the trial and error was that I didn't have access to good research, which now says pictures, patterns, stories, songs, rhythms, whatever. So I was playing around with rhyming, with stories, with pictures, with patterns. And eventually I decided the 3 best methods for improving memory were pictures, patterns, and stories. And once I added that to my teaching, children did remember. And so nearly every student who came to me improved between 2 and 4 grade levels in reading, either accuracy or comprehension or both within 1 academic year. And because of that, I was able to help almost every student to enter high school reading at high school level.
Amazing.
So, but after 25 years, I retired. So then I mm-hmm. began my second career.
And tell us about that.
Well, the second career was that I started a private practice. I really just thought I'll teach some students at home. Mm-hmm. But I was popular. People came to me because their children weren't learning in school. And I soon figured out that I had students from 20 different communities, and not one of them knew anything at all about phonics. And I had this, oh my God, I need to write a book. You know, I have to share what I know, because mm-hmm. there are people all over Massachusetts and probably all over the United States who can't read because they're lacking information about phonics.
Right.
I thought I would write just one book, my Encyclopedia of Reading and Spelling. Mm-hmm. And I had a wonderful publisher, Lynn Damianos. She used, I think it was 80-pound paper and beautiful colors and mm-hmm. a spiral binding, and it cost $95 and nobody bought it. So that was heartbreaking. And one of my friends said, oh, I could have told you that. She said, don't you know, you make it small and inexpensive. So why don't you take that big book and divide it up into sections and publish it again? Well, I keep learning as I go along. So by the time I rewrote the book in sections, I had extra power pack techniques to add, so that I now have accumulated 18 textbooks with Amazon, and I branched out. I don't just teach phonics. I also teach grammar and writing and comprehension. Mm-hmm. So I've been very busy now as an author. And of course, what I'm hoping to do next, now that Massachusetts is about to pass a law, please God, mandating phonics for every child who's learning to read in Massachusetts, then I would like to begin teacher training. Because the teachers in today's schools probably do not know how to teach phonics. That's what the research says. In the Boston Globe just a week ago, the universities were graded as to their ability to teach the science of reading. And most of these well-known universities came out with a D or an F.
Wow.
Teachers just don't know anything about phonics, and you can't teach what you don't know. So I think there's a real need at this point for somebody who does understand the mechanics of language and has, mm-hmm. Probably the quickest method for taking a beginning reader into an advanced reader. That sounds to me very promising. So I need all the support I can get to help pass this law. So what is the law?
Yeah. They
call it an act to promote high quality literacy instruction in all Massachusetts schools. And what that really means is that right now, probably in every school in Massachusetts and in most schools across the country, children are taught three different ways to guess at words, but they are not taught the letter to sound correspondence. They aren't taught that C will say K most of the time, but not if the C goes before an E, I, or Y, then it says S. So that if without this knowledge of what we call sound symbol correspondence, the child can't possibly sound out a word. He can just guess. And we would like the guessing to end permanently. And
yes.
We would like all children to be taught the sounds that the letters make and under what conditions they make those sounds. Now that would only get them through first grade, because those are one syllable words that make only one sound.
Right.
So we do need some advanced instruction in teaching the children how to syllabicate the words according to the two rules, not clapping their hands and guessing.
Right.
And we need to teach them spelling rules and suffixes, but I can do all of that within one academic year. I've been doing it all my life. So what I hope is that once the new law passes and says, yes, this type of instruction will be in every school, then some of those schools might call me and say, hey, we need a reading teacher to train our teachers because we would like to offer the best reading programs to our students. So that's the hope, that's the goal. And those bills are called S-263 and H-579, one for the Senate and one for the House. And the two bills have been voted successfully out of the Joint Committee on Education. That happened about 2 weeks ago.
Now, you've been at this a long time, right? How long have you been working on these bills?
Oh, well, this is new. This bill was just entered this year. But in 2018, I was part of a team that helped to convinced legislators we needed to screen children at age 6 to find out if they might have disabilities, because the sooner the intervention begins, the more successful it is. Mm-hmm. And so we worked on that law for probably 2 years. Yeah, I think we did it in 2 years. We were very lucky.
Oh, wow.
You know, legislators sometimes say, it'll take 10 years to pass the bill. And I said, please, we're talking about children's lives. Don't tell
me.
Yeah. And I've been waiting. I started teaching in the 70s, and I knew what they were doing in the schools was all wrong, but no one would listen to me. Now, of course, Emily Hanford, who wrote that beautiful podcast series called Sold a Story, she has awakened the entire country to the fact that children don't read, and it's not their fault. It's the teaching method. And so there's great interest right now in helping children. And so far, 30 states plus the District of Columbia have already passed a law in literacy. So right. Massachusetts is very slow.
Very behind the times, yeah.
However, better late than never, and we can start saving children immediately if a lot of people write their legislators and say, I know about a way to help children read. Let's vote it in.
So now that we're on this path, hopefully, what should parents do besides getting their legislators to vote for it? What's the next step for them?
Okay, well, if a parent needs to teach a child to read right now, the child can actually come to me for advice or simply buy my books, watch my videos, and do it by themselves. So let me show you what I have hanging around here.
You have a great YouTube channel.
I do. Every concept that I teach is on an animated video on YouTube, Sue Strategies, and the response to the YouTube videos is amazing.
So the ABCs of Sue Strategies, I wanted to just read that out.
It's a book that will just tell parents, this is what to do, this is what you say, this is the video you use, this is the worksheet that you use. Mm-hmm. So this is called How to Get Started. Now, obviously, a child can't learn to read without knowing sounds. So I have a book here, which is called Phonetic Flashcards to Remember. And my flashcards are different from everyone else's because I have directions on how to use the sound. So on this page here, it would show the letter on one side. That's how you quiz the kid. But on the back side, there would be pictures. Mm-hmm. Showing the sounds achieved. Now, Y is a very tricky letter because it makes four sounds, but I have four different cards for Y. So when I have this one here, it will say Y ends multisyllabic words. That means that's the only time you want to know that Y says E, because it won't say E any other time. And then, of course, I've chosen words that kids can relate to, such as candy and pony. Mm-hmm. And so parents need to give the child 5 flashcards a week and make sure that those flashcards are thoroughly learned. So the child would say, Y says E at the end of a multisyllabic word like pony and candy. But I demonstrate how to do everything on a YouTube video so the parent is never lost.
Right. And
so I have the flashcards. Then in addition to that, so the parent won't be lost, I have a book of rules. This is what I teach on the videos, but you can't necessarily remember everything that I say on a video. So mm-hmm. each concept gets one single page. So I mentioned C before. That's a very popular letter in the alphabet. So let me find the C page here.
While you're looking for that, it's okay. So it's very overwhelming for parents, you know, and what's really disheartening, Sue, is that we really want to be able to rely on our teachers and our schools to do all of this. But since the pandemic, I mean, maybe even before then, of course, so much is coming back to us to do, right? And many of us just feel really just not equipped to be able to do this work ourselves and to take up the reins. So I'm glad that you have all of these supports and all of the systems that are step by step and one by one, put one foot in front of the other, take that next right thing to do. But what do you say to the parent that just doesn't feel equipped and doesn't feel ready and just can't do it?
Well, I never met a parent who was equipped and I wasn't equipped either. Mm-hmm. So I don't really take that seriously. Any parent who wants to spend 20 minutes a day with her child or his child can do this system. You need 5 minutes a day to learn flashcards. You need 5 minutes a day to syllabicate words and read them to an adult. You need another 10 minutes to read with the child, and then the child can read by himself, probably. And if not, at least you've done your 20 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that children with difficulties learning language will not learn the letter to sound knowledge once a day. It needs to be done three times a day. Hopefully, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Now, it would be nice if the public schools would do the teaching that I do or that the books and videos do. Right. And then the parent at home would be reinforcing what's happening at school. But right now, with the law not passed, and Massachusetts being the way it is, a prisoner of the guessing systems of reading, the child is not going to receive good instruction unless a miracle happens. Okay. So therefore, the parent's choice is to say, okay, if the child can learn five sounds a week, so can I. We can learn them together. There are only two rules of syllabication that cover, probably 98% of all words. Anybody can learn two rules. One I call share. If you have enough consonants between two vowels, share the consonants. That's why you got candy. You had an A and a Y, and there were two letters in the middle, so you shared them.
Yeah.
And then if you come to a word where there's only one consonant between the two vowels, and you can't possibly share it, you can't kill the letter, that's very bad. So you say vowel, you go last, say your name with a blast, and push the extra consonant to the next syllable. And that way a child can eat a donut, because you have an O and a U with just one letter in the middle. That's the N, and you say vowel, you go last, say your name with a blast, and that's it.
Oh, so you have such cute little ways of remembering these things. I love it.
Thank you. Oh. Well, I also, we call the share rule, I use candy to teach the share rule. That's very effective, and I have candy pictured in the book for sharing. Mm-hmm. And for the other rule, we call it the three-quarter rule, because children like money, and there are four quarters in a dollar bill. And so I have a pile of quarters here, and I say, okay, if the vowel goes last, the 75 cents goes to you. If the vowel doesn't go last, the 75 cents goes to me. And it's just a matter of establishing those patterns. And the share rule will work probably 99% of the time, and the three-quarter or donut rule will work about 75% of the time. Mm-hmm. But that's giving a child enormous reading accuracy without guessing. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Wow, that's really cool. I really was interested in what you were saying about the lack of instruction at the university level and at the graduate school level. And I find that fascinating. What do you think the reason is for that? And then what's the cure?
The cure is easy. The cure is they just need to have people like me come in and guest lecture and train their staff, and then they won't need me.
But we have to look at what's the reason that they don't find that important enough to do it. So
to a certain extent, they've been brainwashed. When they went to college, they were taught whole language, balanced literacy, tell the child to use the words in the sentence that he or she does know and just guess the others, or look at the picture, can't you guess that word, or look at the first two letters and the last two letters, can't you guess that word. So these teachers have been told that the child just needs interesting material, just give the child something that he'd love to read and he'll read it. Well, science says it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And these teachers, because they were trained that way, and because the superintendents tend to pick the reading curriculum based on what the colleges and universities say is right, they're all using the wrong stuff. So yes, it would be wonderful if we could make a change at the university level. Now, I tried at both universities that I attended. I've tried over and over again. They don't want to talk to me. They don't want to hear from me. They like what they're doing, and their resistance to change is not unusual because of the recent article in the Boston Globe. I'm forgetting Naomi's last name, but she gave each university in the Massachusetts area a grade of either D or F, except for three schools. And so that just means that these universities have continued to teach the same stuff that they used to. And that's hard. So it means that teachers who graduate from Boston University, as I did with a degree in reading at the master's level, will know everything about the guessing methods of reading and probably nothing about the phonetic methods. So they go to school and they teach what they know. It's awful.
So, yeah, that's so frustrating. And you know, what's really interesting about the pandemic is that parents got this front row seat, this window into what are my kids learning? What's the instruction that they're getting? And the feedback that I got as an advocate, and I don't do ed advocacy, but I mean, as an advocate in general, was fascinating. And so many of us in this field, you know, really in talking with families, the things that they suspected, but now really were able to see, looking at the lesson plans, really being able to, because they were the ones who were really either just watching what was going on or actually having to deliver the service themselves one-on-one. They're looking at it and they're like, this is not quite what I was expecting, or this is not as effective as I was being told, or now I understand why this is not working. You know, all of these things are happening. It was quite a window into what goes on in the classroom or in the specials every day, right? So with that knowledge in hand, are you seeing from your experts' window, are you seeing any movement towards making some change?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Have you been searching for a law firm that understands the unique challenges of your family? We can help. My name is Annette Hines, and I'm a mom and an attorney. And I'm also an advocate. And I started Special Needs Law Group because when my family was young, I struggled to find all the services and support that my family needed. We can help here at Special Needs Law Group with special needs trusts, guardianships, and maybe you aren't even sure what you need yet, and we can help with that too. Book a free call today. You can either use our link in the show notes, or you can go to www.specialneeds-law.com. See you soon.
Not yet.
No.
While we're working on the law, we have tried every which way to make changes, and we have basically all been rebuffed. So we feel when the law is passed, even though it probably won't have serious consequences, the law is at least a starting point. And that then when we enter schools, or when parents enter schools, they can say, particularly if the child is struggling with reading, well, is my child receiving science of reading instruction? And prove it. Because very often they say yes, and the answer is no. Prove it. Is my child being given only decodable books? Prove it. Will you send me home some decodable books? Because my child can't read anything that I have at home.
Indeed.
So, you know, the start is to have the schools forced into using something that apparently they do not want. Now, once they use phonics, I think that within 3 years, they're going to be saying, why did we wait so long? Because instead of having the National Assessment of Educational Progress say children are worse off now than they've been since 2000 or 2004, these scores are just dreadful, in math and reading, they will see that their children become competent. In other words, we are teaching a child critical thinking skills when we force him to make a choice. Do you want the C to say K or S? And on what are you making that decision? That's a critical thinking skill. He needs that in all aspects of his life, but we're teaching it just through, will the C be a K or will the C be a S?
Right.
And so a lot of what a child learns in terms of the process of learning and learning to read has enormous carryovers to the future. For instance, when a middle school student is studying for a history test, pictures, patterns, and stories are going to help him remember better. Where did he pick up pictures, patterns, and stories? Oh, in first grade. That's how he learned about this, the two sounds of sea. I tell the children it's like Old MacDonald. You know that song, Old MacDonald Had a Farm, E-I-E-I-O. Well, change one letter and you know the rule. And of course I make them sing it, Old MacDonald Had a Farm, E-I-E-I-Y. And then I embellish the story and I said, you know, Old MacDonald's trees are smarter than any other trees in the universe, because his trees grow three letters and other trees just grow a flower or a fruit. But the Old MacDonald tree for C grows the letter E and the letter I and the letter Y. So they now have the pattern of the tree, which is just the shape of a Y with an E on one branch and an I on the other, and the Y itself is the Y. They have the spoken rule. They have the song. They have the story. These kids are ready to start reading words like accept, eccentric. It doesn't matter how big the word is, they now have the power to sound it out as long as they've been taught the rules for syllabication. Mm-hmm. So it's the process of reading not only involves critical thinking skills, but it involves following directions. You didn't divide it up into the right place. You didn't follow the rule. I guess you wanted to get it wrong. Follow the rules.
Oh, wow.
In other words, there are only two rules. It's so simple. We just need them to stop guessing and to follow the rules. Now, if you're starting off with first graders who have a new teacher who has been taught the science of reading, then there are no bad habits to break. So that's wonderful.
Well, that kind of brings me to something that I really want to ask you, and I hope it's not naive of me, but can you apply this to older students who haven't learned the right way before?
Of course.
Either an adult learner or a English as a second language learner. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm just interested because we do have a lot of older students who people never spent time with before, who I'd love to know that there's some hope for them.
Never too old to learn. I worked for Mass Rehab Commission for 20 years. And I've taught people as old as 60 to read. And mm-hmm. these people have gone a whole lifetime without reading. I taught a woman in her 50s. And she went in 2 years from, I think, first grade to ninth grade level in reading. And she looked at me when she came and she said, I can repair everything in the house where I, you know, do housework, but I can't read. And now she said to me, do you have any idea how different my life would be if you had come along when I was a child?
No.
But the answer is the older people, as long as they want to learn, yes, of course they can learn. The system is identical. Now, I have taught a lot of high school students. I mean, I currently have a student who's in 11th grade. Mm-hmm. He started with me 2 years ago, and of course he mastered how to read, but his language problems were much deeper than just, can I read the word? He had a vocabulary deficit and a comprehension problem. Now, he's also a child who's bilingual, but that children can learn almost any language by listening. You cannot learn to, because it's biologically wired in your head that you can learn to read to speak by listening, but you need to be taught the reading process. So he's working with me now because he has to improve his comprehension and his writing skills. And I use exactly the same method for comprehension and writing skills. I have an entire book, I have it here. It's called Right to Be Right. This is for high school kids.
Hmm.
And I use the card symbols as my shapes and colors to help with memory. And mm-hmm. I tell them that if you know how to write a correct sentence and you've got good ideas, and I'll show you how to organize, that's seldom a problem. It's just the individual sentences that are the problem. then you can write beautiful sentences and you don't need to write them five words only because you're afraid that you'll make a mistake. So what I've done is I said, okay, the red heart stands for adjectives. The adjectives love the noun, who is the green clover. They love the noun so much that they will either go before the noun or after the noun, but they insist on being with their noun. If you place them anywhere else, your sentence is wrong. Then we have a verb who's rather hyperactive. He just loves to move. But we worry about losing him. So that's why we have the diamond. And the diamond just happens to have 4 points, and an adverb just happens to fulfill 4 jobs. One is where, one is when, one is why, and one is how. So we tell the verb, you are going to Susan's house today. You will be there at 3:30 p.m. You will chat with Annette Hines. You will do that over Zoom. Okay, so therefore, I have explained the function of each part of speech. Now, our language is very interesting. There are 6 different ways you can be an adjective. But if you don't understand that the adjective tells which one about the noun and will be before the noun or after the noun, then you can't find it because you'll be stuck in some crazy knowledge that a teacher once told you that ing words are verbs all the time. And yet, if somebody said the singing bird, would have been an adjective, which bird, the singing bird. So I teach by function, and this again is very good critical thinking skill. If you just learn the functions, and the reason I have the clover for the noun is nouns have 3 jobs, subjects, objects, and predicate nominatives. So everything fits perfectly, and the children all play cards, and they know the, you know, the clubs, the hearts, the spades.
Yeah.
And the nouns. Now, the other thing that I've done, because this is for high school, is I have practice exercises that are self-correcting, and I've done them all about American history, American government, and American culture, so that at the same time the child is practicing a prepositional phrase or a clause, he's improving his knowledge about his country and hopefully his respect for his country.
very good.
I feel very strongly about that. I don't think the children know nearly as much about America as they do about the sports that they play. And while I love sports, I just think, couldn't we have a 50-50 split? Does it have to be so lopsided? So that's why in all of my older books, we have American history, government, and culture in every practice exercise.
The data shows that over the pandemic, that civics and American history took quite a nosedive. So listen, I have another question for you. And I noticed that in your data points and some of the facts that you had sent over, that you mentioned that children who don't read well have much higher rates of having some tough outcomes in adult life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, except that I forgot to answer your question about English language learners. English language learners love the Sue Strategies program. They tell me, this is how we learned our language in Russia. This is how we learned our language in Poland. This is a rules-based system, and we love it. We feel comfortable with it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So about the bad side of it. All right, Mayor Eric Adams of New York City has invested over $7 million in 2 schools for dyslexic children this year. And that's because he personally is dyslexic and he knows the jails are filled with dyslexic people. If a child cannot read and earn money an honest way, then when he grows up, he will probably get into trouble and end up in jail. And they use the term pipeline to prison.
Mm-hmm.
It's very serious. The society is losing out on the talents of all these people who basically are so clever at fixing everything and figuring out how to solve unusual problems. And where are they? Mm-hmm. They're all in jail. But that's at one end of the pole. I deal with young children who are already failing. I mean, sometimes they come to me at the end of first grade, sometimes second, third, who knows, middle school. I seem to cover all ages. But even the smallest children suffer from anxiety and from sometimes depression, because they can't do what the other kids are doing and they feel inferior. They think something's wrong with them. Then a lot of the times, because when they do read, they sound so awful in class and make so many mistakes, they get called stupid. And then they're bullied. And if that particular child is a fabulous athlete, then that child is exempt from all the bullying and the bad mouthing. But not every child is good enough in sports to avoid it. Now, today I had a very interesting girl come to see me. She's going to spend the summer abroad with her mother because her mother is foreign born and she speaks two languages. Now, she will be entering fifth grade. And when I met her, which was just a couple of months ago, she would almost stutter on the words. She's not a stutterer. There's really nothing wrong with her speech. But she was so nervous and she didn't know what she was doing and it was painful to listen. Half a story today, there was no stuttering and she nailed almost every word. Just so happy. Yeah. In other words, the difference that knowing how to read makes in a person's self-esteem, in a person's feeling, I can conquer the world. I mean, this was so hard for me before and I'm doing it now. Yeah. So this family has bought a couple of workbooks for the summer. They're bringing their flashcards. They're planning to Zoom with me if the Zoom will work. I guess if it's 10 o'clock in the morning there, it'll be 5 p.m. in Boston, so I'll be able to Zoom with them. But I've given them directions so that, God forbid, it doesn't work. They still have all my videos they can access, and they still, you know, have the books, and I've given them some general advice. But it's really sad to see the suffering that goes on. My child suffered terribly. One kid said to him in third grade, "You can't be stupid because you're the smartest kid in the class in math." He was called stupid every single day that he went to school because he not only couldn't read, he also had a peculiar speech pattern. He had trouble remembering words. It's a common problem in dyslexia. Some people have it, some don't. A word retrieval. So he couldn't, when the teachers would say, "Fight, you know, don't fight with fists, fight with words," at nursery school, my child had no words. He couldn't.
Wow. I still say things wrong. My husband's always making fun of some of the things that I say, and I put letters in the wrong place. And I have like I put the indefinite article in front of everything. He's always making fun of that. Like, the Netflix, the Hulu. I don't know why I do that.
That's part of the dyslexia. I mean, and I think it's terribly unimportant.
Yeah, like who cares, right? And he's always pointing out to me that it's wrong. I get like certain words wrong all the time. And there are certain things that I'm always misspelling in that I get my THs backwards all the time when I'm writing things out. And you know, they're just always things that come out wrong. THE, always wrong every time when I'm writing a letter or an email.
Well, I'm not sure this will help you, but when I'm asking children to learn words that are weird and foreign, like weird and foreign, W-E-I-R-D, foreign, it shouldn't be spelled like that. Sometimes using the second and third fingers of the writing hand and tracing the word on a hard surface like a table or even on your body. So if you were to do T-T-H-E so that you could feel it, supposedly the messages travel up your fingertips and into your brain and that will help you.
I just don't know if anything is going to help me at this age. It's always going to be T-E-H for me, I think, forever and ever until I die, Susan. I don't know.
When I look at you and I see the huge accomplishment of your life, I think, who cares?
I know. Well, thank God for spell check. Technology has been so huge for people like me. So huge. But
that note, doesn't work unless you're at sixth grade level. It won't work.
Oh yeah, right. And it doesn't catch everything because if it recognizes it and it's a real word, but it's the wrong word.
Yes, it won't catch
it. That gets me all the time, mm-hmm. you know? So I have people proofread my stuff.
People proofread my stuff too, because I know what I'm talking about, but that doesn't mean they will.
I wanted to ask you.
Yes.
Because, you know, on that note of, you know, ending hopeful and happy, which I like to do, I really want you to tell the audience about Doug. And well, so yeah. How did your son end up, you know?
Well, Douglas was lucky because I came from an educated family and I refused to believe that my son couldn't learn. And I also thought he was very smart. He could put together 100-piece puzzles when he was 3 and 4 years old. Couldn't talk, but he could do the puzzles. And I kept saying, some part of his brain is working. Let's get the rest of it to work. Mm-hmm. So speech therapy lessons, oh gosh, he had those for years. He speaks just fine now. And by increasing his vocabulary over and above what a normal person needs, he would be able to find a word that's appropriate to the thought in his head, because he probably knows 2 or 3 words. So that's how we overcame the word retrieval problem. Eventually, I realized that he had to be medicated for his attention deficit disorder, because he was using up his energy to sit still, and then he didn't have the energy available for learning. I didn't understand that in the beginning. So I did start medicating Douglas at age, I think at grade 5, age 10. And then that helped enormously, because he could just pay attention to learning. And I taught him until he became a teenager and didn't want to take lessons from me anymore. And then my best friends who had gone to the Mass General Hospital program with me said, "Don't worry, Susan, I'll teach him." Okay. So she took care of the writing, most of it. And I kept saying to Douglas, "I will help you in any way possible until you go to college, but you better learn what you need before college, because I won't go there with you." And right. Fortunately for me, he is a success. He always took longer to learn things than anybody else, but he doesn't forget what he's learned because he has struggled too hard to learn it. So Douglas has a bachelor's degree from Northeastern University. He took the work study program there, and that helped with the ADD, not so much studying, and gave him more, you know, experience as to what kind of career he might want. And then he took a master's degree in business at University of Mass Boston, and he's now an accountant. So for a child who had severe attention deficit and severe learning disabilities, he's made remarkable progress. And so I believe that everybody can do that. I'm very hopeful.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. It really is. It needs to be said that obviously not everybody's going to be on the same path. You know, everybody's an individual, but we all need to live up to our maximum potential for sure. You know, so I want to close out this podcast with a couple of tips for families, for parents, because when this podcast airs, it's going to be as we get closer to getting ready for school to come back into session. And parents are always going to be frantic. Individuals who are caregivers, everybody who is, you know, sort of getting ready for that, you know, for fall. This is when we all get motivated to kind of get on the stick and start thinking about you know, all of the things that we need to get busy about. So as we're thinking about sort of tidying up our plan and maybe that next IEP meeting, the next school year, what have you, even the next adult service plan, and we're setting goals, what can we do? What, you know, one or two things can we do to take that next step, Susan, to move forward with a good plan for reading? What do you think?
The first step is to insist that the child receive phonetic training in an approved science of reading method.
Okay.
And, you know, if you don't have that, you're nowhere. Okay. The second thing is that the schools seem to believe that if you give the child 2 30-minute periods a week of special help, everything will be all right. Now, Dr. Orton, who is the father of the science of reading system, said, no, you need 5 hours a week. Now, that means that schools have to be more generous in the services they're providing for the kids. The child should be seen 5 days a week. And 30 minutes is too short because the kid comes in wiggly and the teacher has to sit him down and get him in the mood to work, and that he's going to leave in 30 minutes. He won't have done anything much.
Right.
So I think that parents should aim for science of reading techniques, whichever ones they can manage to get, because it depends on, you know, how the teachers in a particular area are trained. A lot of them just don't have anybody. And then ask for as many hours per week as possible, and 5 would be the goal.
And, you know, Sue's got books, workbooks, and YouTube. They're all available to you anywhere in the country, all over the world, actually. And so please check out our podcast notes. We're going to have all the contact information for you to go ahead and access all of Susan Kahn's materials, and to get in touch with her. If you have any questions, you can find her on her her sites, and all of her contact information will be there. I can't thank you enough. This is such a fascinating topic for me, as you know, because I'm dyslexic and I have my own neurodiversity. So I often think what would have happened if I had had intervention. I mean, I struggled a little bit, but I didn't get labeled. So I think I found my own way. Not everybody does. And I don't know that I would have been better off if I had been labeled, but that's not true for everybody. And I definitely got the help, you know, when I needed it, in order to get through higher education, which was really hard for me. The amount of reading was just, it buried me. So, you know, I'm fascinated by this topic. I love the advocacy and all of the work that you've been doing. You are truly inspirational and really just get me going, you know? And you are the kind of person who you saw something that needed to be done for your own family and you started doing it, but you did it for all of us. You didn't just stop at your own family. You just created something for everybody, which is just the kind of podcast episode that I love to have. So thank you so much for being on the show. I so appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And everything that you said about me is so true of yourself. Look at what you've done and look how you're sharing with us today. It's just beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Susan. And you know what? I hope that we can talk again once these bills pass and we can celebrate. So keep me posted. Okay. And let's connect again. And maybe we'll be able to talk with some different data points and some different numbers.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.